And we are back.
Hey, you guys. Merry Christmas.
Yep.
I can't believe that we haven't talked about this movie. But actually, I'm kind of glad that we haven't, because now we can use this for the Christmas episode, because this is going up on actual Christmas Day, unless you're a patron.
Yeah, this is a classic. This is a classic one. It's I think the reason why we haven't done it is just because it's kind of a given. I think everybody's reviewed this one, huh?
Probably, yeah. There's a shit ton of reviews of this and of the sequel and stuff like that, too.
Movie's Gremlins.
Now, somebody sent us this. It might have been Louis, or it might have been Michael, or it might have been... Because I'm trying to think of, like... Because there's a couple of our fans out there that always send us a bunch of movies.
Yeah, it was a Blu-ray 4K.
And we got, the 4K Blu-ray, like, a while back. So I've been wanting to review this for a while, but I was going to do it before. But then I was like, oh, I should save it until Christmas, and we should do it for Christmas time. Because it's essentially, like, a Christmas movie. It takes place around Christmas time. Although, you know what's dumb? This always, like, freaked me out. It doesn't freak me out, but, you know. This came out in 1984... And it came out in the theaters in June of 1984. Why did they not put it out at Christmas time? Who fucking knows?
Maybe they couldn't get the slot.
I guess not. This actually came out the same day as Ghostbusters.
Really?
And Ghostbusters was number one, and this movie was number two.
Man, it's funny. I didn't remember that.
1984 was a hell of a year.
Yeah.
I think Beverly Hills Cop ended up being, maybe was in the top four that year also.
Okay.
But it didn't come out at the same time. But Gremlins and Ghostbusters came out on the exact same day. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And those are both, like, you know, fucking classics.
Yeah.
From the 80s. And the fact they came out the same day, that just, like, blows my fucking
mind. Yeah, that whole time, man, it just kind of blurs together. You know, I kind of forget what came out in what order and what was going on at the same
time. Yeah, me too.
Like, wasn't Flash Gordon in around this time, too?
I thought Flash Gordon was much earlier.
Was it earlier?
I thought Flash Gordon was maybe late, like, 70s.
No,
or early
80s. No, it was early 80s. It might have been 82, 83, something like that.
Yeah, this was 84.
Okay.
Now, the weird thing about this, though, is that I distinctly remember seeing Ghostbusters in the theater, but I don't think I saw this one in the theater. I'm not entirely sure why, because this would have been right up my alley. I would have been like, how old would I have been? I was 12 when this came out. And I remember seeing Ghostbusters in the theater, but not this one. Which is really weird. Maybe we could only afford to go to one movie a week, and this was the and Ghostbusters was the one we saw, so we didn't see Gremlins.
Yeah.
I saw it later. I saw it like a year or two later on cable or VHS or something.
Yeah.
So this movie was directed by Joe Dante. Now, as well known as Joe Dante is nowadays, particularly for doing horror comedy, he also did The Burbs, which we reviewed. The only really major thing he had done before this movie was The Howling. Which had been in 1981. And then he kind of went into this little career lull a little bit. Now, the interesting thing about this fucking script, the Gremlin script, which was actually much darker, like when it started out, which I'll get into in a bit. But this script was written, and it originally wasn't even supposed to be made into a movie. It was written as a spec script. That, like, you know, because writers, that's like screenwriters, will write a spec script so they can go around to producers and say, hey, look, I can actually write a screenplay, but that's not necessarily the movie that's going to get made.
Right.
But somehow, like, Steven Spielberg ended up reading the screenplay and thinking it kicked ass. So he's like, I'm just going to buy this and make this into a movie. And so he was the producer on it, and he wanted Joe Dante to direct it because Joe Dante had already done horror comedy with The Howling. And even though he didn't really get known for horror comedy until after this movie came out, because he also made The Burbs, like I said, and some other things. But I guess The Howling made enough of an impression on Steven Spielberg that he wanted him for this material. So I thought that was kind of interesting, too. So I guess, like, the dude that wrote it, he was kind of like, I got the idea not only from... I guess it was a book by Roald Dahl that came out in the 1940s that was called The Gremlins. And, you know, gremlins were kind of like a World War II thing. Like, you know, when machinery, like, you know, airplanes, shit like that failed, it was, oh, it's little gremlins or whatever. And, of course, they had that Twilight Zone
episode. Glitches.
Too. Yeah, like glitches, but they were attributing to, like, little monsters.
Yeah.
Little spirits. And so he kind of got the idea to do that. Now, like I said, the original screenplay, and it's funny because I have seen this movie a lot of times. But I watched it again last night, and I hadn't seen it for several years, and I always forget how violent it is.
Yeah.
Like, for, I guess technically technically not supposed to be a kid's movie, but it also kind of comes across like a kid's movie. But then it's like, there's some like really crazy like horror shit in there, which yeah, I think is really funny.
They did a lot of stuff that you wouldn't do today.
Yeah.
And when I saw him put the damn head of the gremlin in the fireplace and it was burning and melting, I was like, damn, I forgot that that's how the 80s rolled. Even though I grew up during that time, that wasn't unusual. I was just like, yeah, burn it. But nowadays they wouldn't put that in a movie, you know, that they thought that they thought would attract kids, I think.
Well,
we were hardcore back then.
Back then there was actually, it's funny to think about now because it's such a classic now. But back then there was a lot of pearl clutching, like a lot of parents, hey, I took my 4-year-old to see what I thought was going to be this cute kids movie by the dude that made E.T. and it has like a cute little Mogwai in it, and then all of a sudden, you know, gremlins are getting like chopped up and in the fucking mixer and like blown up in the microwave and shit like that.
I was a kid when I saw it. I didn't give a shit. I thought it was cool. I was like, yeah. I was a teenager, I guess.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was 12 when this came out. So it's not like it was any kind of traumatizing. No. Anything like that. I could see how if you were 4 and you thought it was a kid's movie about a cute, sweet little creature that sings and, like, you know, talks all cute and everything, and then suddenly it took a hard left turn into horror. I can see how maybe that could be traumatizing if you're 4.
I didn't really think it was horror, but
It's
more like sci-fi, adventure.
It's a comedy horror. It's basically what it is. It's like a black comedy, but it's also an homage to 50s B-movies, like monster movies. Because Joe Dante is really, really into those cheesy old 50s B-movies. And he even put, like, a bunch of them in the background of this, you know what I mean? Like, on
the
TVs and shit like that. Yeah. Oh, I wanted to say that because as many times as I've seen this movie, and I'm glad that some other people on YouTube have pointed this out, because I never noticed this until we were watching it last night. The one scene where the dad, where Billy's dad is at the, you know, invention convention or whatever the fuck it is. And, you know, I noticed, like, the robot from Forbidden Planet, okay, because that, like, walks in front. I noticed the Steven Spielberg cameo who goes by in the wheelchair or whatever. But I never noticed in the back. I noticed the time machine, like, from the movie,
Wells,
the time machine, the H.G. Wells one, the movie that came out with, what's his face, like, Robert Taylor, was that guy's name? I can't remember that actor's name. But that was in it. What I didn't notice was that in the next scene, the time machine was gone.
And there's smoke.
And there's smoke. And then there's two people dressed in kind of like 40s clothes going, where the fuck am I?
Yeah.
Like,
it worked.
I did not.
Time machine worked.
I did not notice that until last night. And I just like laughed and laughed.
Yes.
I noticed the time machine, but I didn't notice that it was gone like in the next one. So I thought that was like really, really funny. But there's all kind of like, you know, there's on the TV, like during the movie, there's some shit from like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and there's all that kind of stuff. I mean, because essentially what this movie is, it's like a Christmas version. It's kind of like, it's got a little bit of It's a Wonderful Life in it, but it's also like kind of like The Blob, because it's just kind of like this infection that
like
takes over the whole town.
Yeah.
And even the way that it was shot, because it was shot all on a set. And, you know, it was shot like Warner Brothers Studios, like the back lot and everything. It's the same back lot that they use for Back to the Future. You know what I mean? So you can see it looks kind of familiar, like the movie theater and stuff. So they set it all up like that. But he wanted that kind of look. He wanted a fake look because he wanted it to look like old movies that were all shot on sets. So, and if you see like the long shots, like of the town, like Kingston Falls and stuff, there's like the backgrounds are matte paintings, like to make the town look bigger.
I remember seeing this as a kid, and the special effects really blew me away back then, like the way the gremlins
the puppets,
look,
yeah.
The puppets. And I was amazed, you know. I see it now and I'm like, I recognize all the tricks.
Well, you know how they do it.
I know
now.
How they do it now, you know. But I was like, how do they get those arms to move like that? Well, the little wire is so thin and the camera can't pick it up. That's
there's different kinds of puppets.
Right, yeah.
They built the set. Some of the sets they had to build like 3 or 4 feet off the ground so you could have like puppeteers underneath.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you were interacting with a puppet that was down here and you didn't have to see the floor, then obviously the puppeteer would be underneath, just like on the Muppets.
Yeah. And back in those days, I was quite impressed. I was very impressed. Well, I see it now and I'm just like, it's good.
It still looks good, I think.
The effects are still good, but they didn't look as good as I remembered them back then. But I don't know if it was because I was watching it on CRT TVs a lot, and it just kind of hid the kind of plasticky textures of the bodies. I remember them looking real. Nah, they don't really look real.
Yeah,
they look
but
good, but they don't look real.
They look like I said, it's kind of like Muppets in the sense that you know that they're not real. Like, they're obviously puppets, but they still have a life to them. So it's very easy to suspend your disbelief and saying these are like real little creatures. Because when I watch it, I don't think about, oh, there's a puppeteer. I'm just like, oh, it's just like a little monster running around.
But back in the day, these special effects were fucking state of the art.
Yeah, people were just like amazed.
They're blown away by it, yeah.
I mean, but and like I said, this coming out the same day as Ghostbusters, which had the amazing fucking Stay Puft Marshmallow Man
thing,
and that looks really good and everything too, which was just done with miniatures and, you know, back projection or, you know, green screen or whatever. But it's like, and that still looks amazing. But this, I mean, like I said, it's a combination of what they did when they did close-ups. They would have, like, the head was bigger. So some of the puppets, they just had the heads, like Gizmo's head and Stripe's head. They just had one that was just a head, but it was bigger, and they used, like, servos and stuff, like, to control the face. Because the smaller puppets, they wanted them to be little. Because I think the puppeteers complained initially to Joe Dante and was like, can we please, like, make these creatures, like Gizmo and stuff, can we make them bigger? Because it's such a pain, like, to get them to move realistically, but they're so small. And Joe Dante was like, no, it's like Gizmo particularly has to be that small because his cuteness is like the whole kind of thing to it. So they can't make him bigger, so they had to like make some bigger versions of his head, like for close-ups and whatnot, so you could see like the expression in his face. So basically what I was going to say too is that the original version of this screenplay, I mean, and we mentioned before, like I said, if you haven't seen Gremlins, I don't know where the fuck, what the fuck planet you're from, because I feel like everybody has seen this fucking movie at least once.
At least older people have seen it.
And I feel like a lot of younger people have seen it too, because like I said, a lot of younger people that I've seen like review movies like on their YouTube channels, like pretty much everybody has for this.
Yeah, and everybody's kind of going back to the 80s and the 90s stuff that was going on anyway. It's classic era.
Yeah, so I'd be very, very surprised if you hadn't seen Gremlins. Like I said, I know that there's probably some people that haven't, but, you know, it's just, I feel like it's an American classic and everybody needs to see it at least once. But as dark as this movie is, like I said, you know, the original batch of Gremlins that comes from, you know, Gizmo, they all get killed by Billy's mom, because Billy's mom don't take no shit from no gremlins, and she just fucking, like I said, she blows one up in the microwave, she decapitates one, and like the head goes into the fire, and shit like that. So, and people do die in this, like the gremlins kill people. They kill Billy's science teacher, they kill that cranky old bat that was played by Polly Holiday, who was Flo on Alice. I was like, man, Flo's such a bitch in this, I forgot. But, you know, so people do die in this. But in the original screenplay, Billy's mom was actually killed and decapitated by the gremlins. And, like, Billy came home and, like, his mom's head, like, rolled down the stairs. In the original screenplay, the gremlins also ate Billy's dog, which I was kind of like, the dog got kind of abused in this one too, like, because I think the gremlins like tied him up in all the Christmas lights and he was out there like hanging, which kind of, I was like, oh shit, that's upsetting. I didn't remember that being in there. But there was all kind of other shit like that where it was like way more mayhem. Like a lot of people got killed like in horribly, horribly violent ways. So I guess once they decided to go in a little bit of a more black comedy direction, they decided to tone down the violence a little bit. And like I said, even doing that, a lot of parents, particularly very, very young children, who had mistakenly perceived that this was a kid's movie, you know, took little kids to see it, and the kids were freaking out because it was kind of like, you know,
I remember the shit was PG.
It was PG.
It's not a G-rated shit.
It was PG. And actually, this movie and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom were the first two movies that, those two movies were the ones that got the MPAA to say, well, we need another rating between PG and R. So that's where PG-13 came from. This wasn't the first movie to have a PG-13 rating because this was a PG. I think Red Dawn was the first one that had a PG-13, actually. But this and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom with, you know, the heart ripping out and all that kind of shit were kind of the impetus for making that rating. Because they're like, we want something that it's like, it's not violent enough to be an R, you know, because this probably isn't violent enough to be an R, but it's still not really for kids either.
It had humorous elements, but in terms of like acceptability for kids and shit, I'd put it up there with like Poltergeist.
Yeah, if your if your kid could handle Poltergeist, now Poltergeist is way scarier than Gremlins.
Yeah,
Gremlins has like violence.
I'm talking about the graphic content. Though. Yeah, about the same.
Yeah, like you know, Gremlins is violent, but it's the violence is kind of like played off as being like funny or like farcical kind of.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I don't think it's quite. And plus, it's like a lot more. I mean, like I said, Poltergeist just seems like a normal family, and then it's like ghosts and shit. So it's like a lot less. I don't want to say it's less fantasy based because obviously, like a lot of the shit that happens in that is just like way the fuck out there. But I mean, if you're gonna talk about how likely is it that ghosts exist versus how likely is it that these types of gremlins exist, I mean, Poltergeist is like slightly on more believable. Yeah. You know what I mean? So I'm saying that that's like way scarier. So it's, you know, but like I said, this is way like a way funnier movie. Oh, can we talk, too, about... This is another thing that I didn't realize until I watched it last night, was that Billy's dad in this, the inventor, is played by Hoyt Axton, who I knew was a country music guy, and then he kind of became an actor later on. What I didn't realize until I was watching it last night and was listening to his voice was that that is the same singer that did the theme song for Mitchell with Joe Don Baker, which was on Mystery Science Theater, which was one of, like, the biggest, like, one of their most popular episodes. Not and he either. Did that terrible, terrible theme song called, like, My Mitchell or whatever the fuck it was. And it's like, because I'm sitting there going, is that, that's the dude that did Mitchell? Because I was like, I know that fucking voice because I've seen that episode so many times. And then when I looked it up today, I'm like, oh my God, I thought it was. That's like fucking thing. But it's like, the thing, okay, so the interesting thing about this movie, and like I said, if you, everybody's seen this movie, so you know what it's about. Billy gets like an adorable little, you know, creature for his birthday that his dad bought, or for Christmas rather, that his dad bought in Chinatown. And, you know, there are very, very specific rules. Don't get him wet. Don't feed him after midnight. Yes, I know a lot of people have said it's always after midnight somewhere. How the fuck, when's the cutoff? You know what I mean? I just assumed it was like sunrise. Like, don't feed them between midnight and sunrise, wherever you are. But then people are like, what if they're on a plane? What if they're, you know what I mean? What if they're on a satellite?
That's
what
not
if
they're the in thinking space? Of the time.
I know. It's like, just don't think about it too
That's
much.
That's not the thinking it's of the not, time.
Like I said, I just thought, don't eat after midnight. And then, like, once the sun comes up, it's safe again. That's what I thought. But you know what I mean? I wasn't thinking about it too much. But, and you're not supposed... So you're not supposed to do any of that stuff. So the shitty thing, too, is that, like, as soon... Like... Billy has had this tiny little creature for literally maybe an hour or two, and it just immediately starts whiffing it, like, all over the place. It's like the fucking, you know, Corey Feldman comes over, and, you know, like he does, and he just, you know, knocks fucking water onto the poor little thing, and, you know, and then they, well, I mean, when they feed him after midnight, that's technically not Billy's fault, because they chewed through the wire so the clock would stop, so he still thought it was 11:30 and he still thought it was safe. But yeah, so one thing that I had forgotten about rewatching this movie again, other than like I had forgotten how upsetting that was that the dog got hung up in the lights and everything, because I was like, that poor fucking dog. One thing that always kind of...
The dog was alive, though, from whatever.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. Like I said, in the original script, he got eaten by the gremlins, okay. So I guess he fared much better in the actual final movie. But one thing that I thought was really interesting was that Billy seemed, like, when he got Gizmo, you would think this is a new species. This is an animal that has never seen, and this is clearly a very intelligent species because he can kind of talk. I mean, he says bright light. He says things like that. You know, he can say sorry. He says, uh-oh. He says stuff like that. So he obviously has some, like, human-like intelligence because, you know, Billy's, like, playing the... you know, the keyboard or whatever, and he's like, oh no, that was the wrong note, and so he can do shit like that. I feel like if that was me, or if that was real life, I feel like I'd be, like, much more amazing. You know what I mean? Because Billy's just kind of like, oh, cool. And then they just kind of start hanging out. You know what I mean? Like, it's, like, not even a thing.
That was also not the thinking of the time.
I guess not.
No.
I guess looking at it now, I'd be like, that's a whole undiscovered species.
But that's not how things were. That's not
and
how,
he's smart.
That's not how you looked at things back then.
He talks and
back
everything.
In those days, if you saw a UFO, right, and an extraterrestrial, an ET comes out of there, you grab that sucker, you sell his ass. That's how you did it back then.
Sally. I do kind of feel like that some of that bleeds through because...
Right. It's just, look, we got it. This is ours. Hey, fuck all these other people. We're going to figure this out.
This manifest destiny, motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah. Manifest destiny. Another species. It's okay. I got this.
Dominion over the earth.
Yeah, it just doesn't... It didn't,
that's what God said.
It didn't... People didn't think that way.
I guess not. But like I said, it's just really funny watch. Although I remember like being kind of weirded out by it at the time too. Like even when I was 12. Because, you know, he gets this amazing little creature.
Yeah, but you have to remember he got it from the Chinese.
Yeah.
Okay, which that explains everything.
Oh, okay.
Now you understand?
Yeah. Yeah, he got it from the magical Asians.
Yeah, it was just China and it's way far away.
Nobody's been there. It's a mythical country.
Anything could happen. Well, it's from China.
Yeah.
You know?
Big Trouble in Little China also kind of played on that as well.
Think it is in the thinking of the day. That's far away.
It's kind of like the joke. Was this from SNL, like the Coneheads, where basically they're the Coneheads, but everyone said they're from France. And everyone was just kind of like, oh, all right, fair enough.
That makes sense, yeah.
So, yeah, maybe that's what it was. Maybe he was parodying that. Maybe he was parodying this, like, oh, the mystical Orient or whatever. And it's like, so they get this...
Well, we believed in also that fucking Kung Fu was real.
That's true.
All right, so...
That's true.
So, yeah, if it came from China, then they might have some shit like that there in China. And in China, that's kind of normal. The little kid sold it. He said, Granddad's dumb. We need the money. You know what I mean?
That's true.
It's just a mugwai.
Yeah, it's so, like, yeah, we got shit tons of these things.
Got shit tons of them back in China.
That's China's lousy with them.
Yeah.
Little mugwai everywhere.
We're sick of them things.
They
don't taste good.
It's like tribbles, kind of.
Yeah,
I was
like
actually thinking about tribbles. It's like they're super cute, but it's like everybody's like, yes, they're everywhere.
I grew up during that era. I understand the thinking at a time.
Well, I did too, but it's just I was just saying.
You're getting too conscious. You're getting too world conscious behind it. This is another species. Man, we didn't give a shit about that.
Well, yeah, and like I said, they immediately start fucking up the rules. Admittedly, not on purpose, really, but he's not being super, super careful, which I would be, like, because, you know, even if it wasn't, like, you know, a totally undiscovered species, this is obviously an intelligent creature. Like I said, he can talk, and he reacts like a human would react.
Yeah, so but he can't spell, so... You know.
So I feel like you would be a lot more careful, you know what I mean, to adhere to the rules of his little life
and take care.
I
remember
that's
just accepting it.
Well, everybody did.
Yeah,
that's what I mean. It's just a movie.
It's from China, and yeah, they got that kind of shit.
Yeah. But yeah, because I was saying too that as soon as like Corey Feldman comes over and knocks water on your mogwai, which is a sentence I never thought I'd say out loud, but you know, and he has that gross thing where he starts like popping all those little fur balls off his back, and then they also grow into mogwai, and then everybody's just kind of like, huh. Like, you know, it's like nobody, like, flips out or anything.
No.
And then the dad is immediately, well, shit, man, let's pour more water on him. And then we'll have millions of these things and we can sell them. We'll be millionaires.
Yeah.
That's another thing, too, is, like, the mom looks like a housewife, right? I mean, she doesn't, like, go to work or anything. And the dad is an inventor, but he's a shitty inventor.
Yeah.
I'm like, who is paying the mortgage on that house?
But remember, he was doing direct sales.
Okay.
He was walking around just selling things to random people.
But I'm just saying.
He tried to sell an ashtray.
A smokeless ashtray.
Smokeless ashtray. So
to that guy,
he was
inventing,
making it in his own house, and walking around selling these inventions, and he was able to support his family, which is a very childlike concept, even back then.
I mean, well, maybe that's why Billy had to work at the bank, because he was trying to like support his dad was like a loser that couldn't like make any money.
Well, you wouldn't be able to support your family and pay for that house.
I know.
I guess it's implied that some of those inventions are good, and he's selling the ideas to companies.
Maybe.
But companies don't need ideas. They have ideas of their own.
Like, the mom character in this is so great, because not only is she, like, a gremlin-killing badass, and she's just, like, not having it, But she's also, like, really supportive of her husband's work, even though he's terrible at it. Yeah. Like, even she uses all the gadgets, even though they don't work, and you don't have to use
them.
That
reminds me of Sorority. Around this around this era, they're not labor-saving. They're labor-making devices.
Exactly.
That reminds me of around this era, there was an infomercial that they would constantly play on TV, like a commercial during the times when, like, in between Geraldo and Sally, Jesse Raphael, about if you're an inventor... We can help you.
Yes, I remember that.
Remember that? We can help you make it rich on your great inventions. Just do this and that and call it. And you know that was a scam.
Of course it was.
You show up and then you're on a 1-800 number. They're talking to you for an hour about your damn inventions. Probably racking up fucking 20, 30 bucks worth in telephone fees. And then you probably have to give them $400 to fucking
make a prototype or some shit.
No, to submit the paperwork for your invention. I'd imagine that they made fucking thousands and thousands of dollars just submitting useless paperwork.
Oh, I'm sure.
Off of fucking nuts in their trailers who think that they have
who
this
think
fucking,
that they've invented like
they've
the
invented
next
something.
Big thing.
Yeah.
I mean, and
a
I'm
new
not
coat hanger.
You know, it's like I don't want to shit on inventors because to be fair, like some really really dumb shit has made like millions of dollars. Like sometimes you see some like that really really stupid shit. Like look at the fucking pet rock for Christ's sake. Like some guy just came up with it. He's like, "Hey, I'm going to find a rock and stick some googly eyes on it and stick it in a cool box." And that dude made like millions of dollars, you know what I mean? So, just cuz the idea is stupid doesn't mean that other idiots won't buy it.
Yeah, most of those inventions don't last.
No, that's
long.
True. But I'm just saying that, you know, you can't just shit on an idea right out of the gate because it's like you never know like what idiots will pay for. So, but I do feel like one of the whole jokes of the movie is that his dad's inventions are stupid and don't work. And you know what I mean? And it's like, and it kills me that they're still trying to use them. Even when the dad's not there, like the dad's not even there to be like, "Hey, why aren't you using my egg breaker thing with the chicken head on it? Or why aren't you using the orange juicer that like sprays shit all over? Why aren't you using that?"
Even they're not labor saving devices.
Even when he's not there, they're still using them. And I'm like, you don't have to. You could just, if you're making orange juice, just squeeze the orange with your hand. It will be like much better.
Remember that stupid thing they used to try to sell you on TV? It was like like an electric toothbrush with a fucking spike on the end of it, and you stabbed it inside of an egg, and it beaded the egg inside the
It's like, why?
Shell. Just some stupid shit.
It just seems like really... I don't like those kitchen gadgets that only do one thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's just... Oh, no, well, that's why Ronco kept adding, and if you act now, we will also include, and they start, the next thing you know, it's fucking 40 things, all for the low price of fucking $19.99. Okay, let's get back to the fucking thing.
But yeah, seriously.
Because, they knew what they were doing.
They definitely did.
Yeah.
So, did we even mention that Phoebe Cates is in this? Because Phoebe Cates is in this.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in Korea in the Army, all our KATUSAs, which are Korean Army Augmentations, the U.S. Army, they're the Koreans that work for us, the young Korean soldiers. They fucking love Phoebe Cates.
Well, she's darling.
They have posters of her and shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she was, especially after Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which came out before this. And actually, there was a little bit, I don't think it was controversy, but I think when they were first talking about casting her in this, everybody's like, well, so she was the boob girl from Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Isn't she a little racy to be in this one or something like that? But they wanted her anyway.
Yeah, well, I don't even think the Koreans knew about that. They just fucking had posters.
They didn't know about that, and they still loved her.
Yeah, they still loved her. Yeah, there was something about the way she looked. I don't know. I don't know if she's Amerasian or something, but there was just something about the way that she looked for Korean guys. In the very early 90s, just fucking,
she's super cute.
Love
she's super
Phoebe
cute
Cates, and that was like the most famous American woman in Korea was Phoebe Cates.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was. Like
I mean, she was pretty famous here too, but you know what I
no,
mean.
No, that was
but
their version as... of Marilyn Monroe.
Wow.
You know,
see,
that was
I didn't
like their,
know that.
Yeah, that
That's
was like
fascinating.
It was back then.
That's cool though. I like stuff like
and
that.
We were kind of mystified, like her. I mean, she was cute, but...
I mean, we like Phoebe Cates, too, but...
No, for them, it was like Marilyn Monroe.
They were like...
Or just...
She's the ideal American woman, Phoebe Cates.
Yeah.
Popping
kind of like their version. Kind of like... Remember how big Farrah Fawcett was in the 70s?
Yeah. With
that's
that
Phoebe
feathered
Cates
hair,
was,
that swimsuit.
Yeah. Phoebe Cates was in Korea like Farrah Fawcett.
That's hilarious.
In the
I
early
didn't,
90s.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they loved her.
But yeah, so she had been in Fast Times at Ridgemont High, like I said, and then she was in this movie. And I guess she, like, Zach Galligan, the kid that played Billy, he was I think he'd been in a couple things, but he was like a he was pretty new. Like, they just they picked him because him and Phoebe Cates like had really good chemistry with one another. But I think one of the things that people always talk about when they talk about this movie is Phoebe Cates, my dad dressed as Santa and died in the chimney speech, yeah. And that's why I hate Christmas. Now, the funny thing about that is that it wasn't the original script, because like I said, original script was way darker. And a lot of the producers didn't want it in there because they're just kind of like, you know, yeah, this is supposed to be a black comedy, but that speech, we're not really sure if that's supposed to be funny or if it's supposed to be sad or what are we supposed to be feeling about it. It's like too, they, you know, they were kind of, they thought it was too ambiguous or too ambivalent, or that it was like too weird, like tonally. But Steven Spielberg, he wasn't a big fan of it, but he's basically like, look, Joe Dante, I picked him as director. It's his movie. So if he wants to leave it in, he can leave it in. So Joe Dante wanted to leave it in because he's like, to me, that speech is like the encapsulation of the whole tone of that movie, where it's just kind of like this fucking, it's almost kind of like a sick joke. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's kind of funny, but then, and they said when they screened it, like for audiences, like the audiences thought it was pretty funny too, even though it's a pretty fucked up story. It's basically, it's an urban legend. I had heard that urban legend before I even saw the movie. Although it has actually happened a few times. I don't remember if it was a Santa Claus specifically trying to come down the chimney, but I think that there was a case, or at least one, of a kid that was trying to get back in his, I was trying to break into a house or something like that.
Yeah,
like down
that.
The chimney and like fell and broke his neck or got stuck.
Yeah.
And then like he died.
I think it's
there.
The same case. There was a kid that went missing.
Yeah.
They didn't find his ass for years. And then they went, they either sold this abandoned house or they were getting ready to demolish the house. And I think maybe somebody went in there to move into that house. But it was, the house was vacant for many years. And they found his fucking rotten ass in the damn chimney.
Can you imagine?
I think the chimney was plugged and they started a fire or something in there. Or they smelled it or, man, I can't remember all the
details.
Well,
that's what she says in the story. So I can't really remember. I mean, yeah, you would think, I don't know. And now I'd have to look at it. I'm sure that's happened more than once, right? I mean,
he was trying
to
break into the house without breaking in, so he just tried to go down the chimney. He was a teenager.
See, that's what I thought, too. He was trying to, like, get back. He was trying to sneak back in, because it was, like, after curfew or something, right? Or was he trying to break into someone else's
house? He was
trying
to break into somebody. Oh, well, okay. It was a house that wasn't owned.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
All right, and it had been vacant for a while. He was trying, I think it had stuff in it, you know?
Yeah.
I'm kind of imagining a place where somebody died, and it was locked up, you know what I mean? The family locked it up, and there was still stuff in there. He was going to go in there and kind of burglarize it, but he wanted to sneak in. He didn't want to break in any windows or anything to get in. So he just went down the chimney, evidently. That's what they think.
Don't go down the chimney, kids.
And he got stuck and couldn't get out.
It won't end well.
And died in there. So he was probably in there for 7 days dying of thirst.
Yikes.
Imagine that. Bad
way
to
go. I mean, at least in the Gremlin story, like, the dad, like, slipped and broke his neck and was dead immediately instead of, like, just being stuck in there and not being able to get out. Because that would really suck. Also,
it probably got narrow as it went down and you got wedged in there.
See, that's what I think. It depends on the chimney. Like, I have, you know, this is Florida. Some people have fireplaces.
We don't really
have them. You know, cause, like, my mom's house has a fireplace. But you don't really get to use it all that much because it's always hot as shit.
It's decoration.
But, yeah, look how fancy I can use some room that I, you know, that I don't need, that I don't ever
use. All right, this movie here. Some people want to say that this is one of Spielberg's best movies. I think it's a good movie. I don't think it's one of his best, though. I'd much rather take Raiders of the Lost Ark or... really, my favorite thing that he did was probably Close Encounters. I love that movie.
I know you do. Yeah.
It would be hard for me to pick.
Probably Raiders of the Lost Ark if I had to pick a favorite Steven Spielberg movie. You know what I mean?
That one's fully encapsulated, but there's something about fucking that little kid getting sucked out through the doggy door, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
That actually used to scare me when I was little.
What was his name? Barry? His mom, Barry, and the fucking kid gets taken up.
Yeah, for sure.
Like
aliens
that
are like, hey, I'll be taking that kid.
Yeah,
looks
they
like
added
a snack on him on the way back.
I always wanted to see what was inside the damn alien craft, and then they added scenes to show what was in there.
Because everyone was like, what?
What the fuck was in there? Yeah.
It's kind of like, what, your budget run out? God damn
it.
But yeah, so this one, I wanted to mention too, Polly Holiday in this, who I talked about briefly, Mrs. Deagle, who is like a gigantic asshole in this movie. She's obviously supposed to be a combination of
the Wicked Witch.
The Wicked Witch of the West, especially, and because she straight up says to Billy, I'm going to kill your dog.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? So, I mean, on several occasions. So she's kind of got that going on. And I love how she gets killed in this. It's delightful.
Yeah.
I mean, because not only this cranky old, she's also supposed to be kind of like Scrooge too, because she's kind of, she owns most of the town. She Cruella has the,
DeVille.
Yeah, she owns like, she has all the mortgages on people's houses and everybody's like, hey man, we're going broke. And it's like, can you give us an extension? And she's like, fuck you. You know what I mean?
She's freeloaders.
Yeah, it's kind of shit like that. So this is very Scroogey. So I love that they not only have the gremlins like fuck up her little chairlift thing like in her house and she goes flying up the fucking stairs, but they also like throw her at the, she breaks the window and goes flying across the fucking, they're like, fuck you, old lady. We're like throwing you out. Like I said, it's just, it's very funny that the '80s were a very different time. This ostensibly kids movie had all of this kind of, all of this death in it. All of this violence in it. There was, I think at one point, because Phoebe Cates' character, she works at the bar, right? And all the gremlins, like, take over the bar. And I think one of them at one point has, like, a ski mask on and is, like, trying to stick her up, like, with a gun.
Yeah.
And the fucking, and at the end, when they're doing the big fight with Stripe in the department store, like, Stripe tries to kill Billy. He straight up shoots him with a crossbow arrow.
Yeah.
And then he, I think he hits him with a bat or something like that. And then, like, he tries to kill him with a fucking chainsaw.
Yeah.
They're not, was, and he shoots at him and he misses and shit like that. They weren't fucking around.
It wasn't a kid's movie in the way that you
not really.
Call a kid's movie. It was for young adults and teenagers and adults and, you know, kids at like 10, 11, you know, they like that kind of shit.
Yeah, like I said, I was 12 or 13 when I saw it. And I really like, I think the reason that movies like this have endured, maybe more than any other genre, because this is kind of like its own genre. Yes, you could call it horror comedy, but it was always, it was kind of like this weird, like, liminal sort of movie where it's kind of like too scary for kids, but it's like not scary enough for grown-ups.
Yeah, well, the movie delivered if you were a kid, because, you know, the gremlins were a threat. They were shooting at people. They were shooting each other.
They killed people.
They were shooting each other. They were smoking and being bad and fucking up the theater. And they were, you know, dressed. One of them was dressed up like a woman. And the other one was dressed up like a blues singer. So, you know, it's just, it delivered. When you were a kid, you were like, yeah, yeah, that's badass. Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, he shot the other one. Yeah,
He did. So, he shot one of the other gremlins straight up, shot him in the face.
So it wasn't talking down to you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
They were a threat. I think that was the appeal.
Right.
Like,
just
of
like
these types of
movies. When I was a kid, 77, I saw Star Wars in the theater. My dad took me to see it, and it was this fantastic science fiction movie that just really appealed to kids, but it didn't talk down to you. It was like I was enjoying an adult movie and understanding it.
Yeah.
So that it had that same kind of...
And like I said, it's not, you know, it's... Gremlins is violent. I mean, like I said, the gremlins are actually threatening, and they do actually kill people in this movie. But in also, it's not so gory and so over the top that a kid couldn't watch it. And like you said, I think that there's like a really good, you know, it's kind of the same liminal space, like I said, that had like Monster Squad and like movies like that, that are kind of kid oriented, you know, or have like kids as the main characters or as, you know, sideline characters. And, but they're not so scary to be like horror movies, but they still like have a lot of elements in them that kids would find scary, but they still want to watch it.
Poltergeist was a little bit scarier.
Yeah.
But really, out of all the Steven Spielberg movies, for me, Close Encounters was the one that creeped me out the most. Because that's presented in a very realistic way.
I think that's kind of what makes that one creepy.
It's realistic.
Although I will still say that Poltergeist is probably... Although Toby Hooper maybe directed that, so we don't really know.
Yeah.
But Steven Spielberg...
For me, Close Encounters was a spooky, creepy movie that aliens are coming to get you and they're controlling people. And then it kind of ends up with a happy ending. They give the people back and you get to see them and they're doing sign language. And, and you're like, oh, this is awesome. And then they split.
You know what I mean? So we took him for a little while.
Yeah.
We just did a little anal probe. It's fine.
The build up to during the Close Encounters when you weren't really sure what was going to happen.
Well, yeah, because you didn't know what these aliens...
What's going to happen? Right, yeah.
But like I said, I feel like... Oh, another thing, too, before we end and I forget about it. Another thing I wanted to say, too, about Gremlins is that this... Maybe you don't catch this because I don't think I caught it, like, the first few times I watched it, but I was watching it again last night. This is kind of a very anti-technology movie. Did you notice?
Most movies were anti-technology.
I guess they were, kind of. I mean, not only that, but because you had to think, like, the dad was an inventor and was, like, inventing all this stupid shit that didn't do what it was supposed to do and it just broke and everything. But also, the whole thing about the mystical Asians and their little creature, and they said, you know, just these very three simple rules, and then, you know, they give it to the white people, and the white people just fuck everything up, and everybody in the town is dead, pretty much, it looks like. They don't really, like, specify, but it kind of looks like everyone's dead. And then, you know, they have to blow up the theater and, like, kill all the gremlins and stuff. And so then Mr. Wing, like, the guy comes back and he's just like, yeah, you bitches fucked this all up. I'm taking this back. You guys are not ready. You're, like, letting him watch TV. He even says that. Why are you letting him watch TV?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's very, very kind of like...
Well, the message was is that American consumer culture was not ready for access to Mogwai.
Yeah.
They would fuck that shit up.
They did fuck that
because
shit up.
Because they did fuck it up.
They did
right.
fuck it up. There's like, and, I knew that one.
Right. So, you know, that's what they were talking about. It is an anti-technology, anti-mass market, anti-consumerism message, which that's really what America has always been.
Which is funny because they marketed the shit out of this movie. Right. I mean, there was like all kind of toys that...
This goes back to the times of fucking robber barons and the railroads and J.P. Morgan and all these guys, they really fucked America up. I mean, they hurt a lot of people in their rise to power. But they also built the infrastructure of the U.S.
We've always had a very ambivalent relationship with that.
And that's coming back around with big tech and shit. Now people are like, man, this technology can be used for evil. What are they going to do? They're going to use the fucking... Are they going to put a damn cell phone in your head and attach it with wires, and then they're going to control you remotely and fucking control what information you can have and can't have? They're going to make you think for yourself because it's too dangerous. Or they make you... They're going to think for you because it's too dangerous for you to think for yourself. That's the kind of shit. Technology's a good thing, but it can be used for evil.
Well, it's just kind of like anything else. Right. Any new developments are kind of like a double-edged sword.
Here's an example. In one of the newer Batman movies, Batman makes a damn device that listens to all the fucking spoken voices through everybody's cell phones and all their technology, so he can find... Who was it? Was it the Joker?
I have not seen that movie in years. Yeah.
All right. And this thing was like the ultimate spy device. You could find out any information you wanted. But in the end, Batman, once he gets the bad guy, he says, fuck this, and he destroys that program.
Although somebody else will just come up with it.
Well, that was the morality of then, and that was in the 2000s? You know, I think it was 2000-something, you know, with Batman Begins, and I think it was the second one after that. Now we have that. It's called Google, basically. They do that.
Yeah.
And you don't see them turning that shit off for their reasons. I'm very suspicious of corporations and their fucking access to this kind of power. You don't even really want nation states with that kind of power. It takes you back to the fucking Ridley Scott's vision of the future with Wayland Industries and fucking all these... What was the one from the new one? Fucking is making the holographic girl. What was the name of that company? Wallace. Wasn't it Wallace? Yeah. I'm skeptical. I'm fucking scared of all that shit.
Yeah.
If it's bad, they'll do it. If it makes money. Yeah.
But yeah, so Gremlins, obviously a very, you know, a Christmas classic. A lot of people watch it on Christmas along with this, Die Hard, some other ones. They did make a sequel to this, obviously, in 1990, Gremlins 2, The New Batch, which actually was a lot more of a comedy, but it was actually like a satire. They satirized the first one. They satirized the commercialism of the first one, like all the toys and stuff that had come out. And they satirized the very idea of sequels. I feel like I didn't like the sequel when it first came out, like when I saw it, but I think it holds up better today than it did at the time. I think back then, I think people didn't really get, they're like, what, I wanted more of like Gremlins, like a horror comedy.
Yeah, they wanted that. Whereas wanted more of that.
Whereas the second one is just more like a straight up satirical comedy that's like making fun of the first one, sort of. You know, and making fun of the, like I said, the idea of sequels, you know, in general.
If you like a movie and you want more of that, you can always go to the fucking Italian market. The Italians will just give you more of that.
Yeah, it's not going to be as good, but not usually.
They're just going to rename it like Critters.
I feel like Gremlins was kind of this, because so many like knockoffs came out after. There was Ghoulies, there was Troll, there was Hobgoblins,
Troll
which was
two.
On Mystery Science Theater. There was fucking, what was the other one? Yeah, Critters.
Yeah.
God damn.
There were lots
there
lots
was
of
a
knockoffs.
Million of them.
Lots and lots of knockoffs.
Was Ghoulies the one that with the little one that was coming out of the toilet on the cover?
I think so.
I can't
been
remember.
So
there were so many like little creatures go batshit insane movies that came out in the wake of Gremlins.
Yeah.
It's just like fucking hysterical, like to think about.
Most of them bad.
Well, yeah, and in the case of Hobgoblins, legitimately terrible, but made a good Mystery Science Theater episode. So I'm not going to shit on it too hard because that's like legit one of my favorite episodes because that movie is just so awful. All right, so I guess that'll do it for our movie retrospective of Gremlins.
Yeah.
Everybody have a Merry Christmas, and we'll see y'all on the next one. Bye.